Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Thomas Jefferson, Episode 3. I'm reading the Wikipedia article for you. I've got a little bit of a thing in my throat. But this time, I'm actually doing a little cut in the page, these Wikipedia pages, see where I'm up to, because at the gym at night, I'm reading through ahead, and now I'm rereading this in the morning, much more. It's still exhausted way of reading it to you. So I've heard about Jefferson being Secretary of State and having to actually he's really what modern America is about, this lack of the federal, suspicion of the federal government, you know, the government, the CIA, the big people are slightly evil. You see that in stuff, and a pragmatist with Britain and France trying to do it. And he's got himself caught up with the French Revolution, the terror, trying to navigate between the horror of revolutionaries and the ideals, caught up with it. The election of 1769 and vice presidency. In the presidential campaign of 17... And you've got to remember that the presidential campaign is equivalent to our council elections. There's probably 100,000 people enfranchised in the United States. In the presidential campaign of 1796, Jefferson lost the Electoral College vote to Federalist John Adams, 71-68, and was elected vice president because of a mistaken voting of Adams' running mate. Oh, wow. So Federalists are the bad guys. As presiding officer of the Senate, he assumed a more passive role than his predecessor John Adams. So John Adams is now the president, but he used to be head of the Senate, but now he doesn't. He allowed the Senate to freely conduct debates and confined his participation to procedural issues, which is like the speaker, wouldn't you? Which he called an honourable and easy role. Jefferson had previously studied parliamentary law and procedure for 40 years, making him unusually well qualified to serve as presiding officer. In 1800, he published his assembly notes on the Senate's procedure, a manual for parliamentary practice. Jefferson would cast only 3 tie-breaking votes in the Senate. Okay, so it's pretty... unfortunately, there's a colour picture here, and I printed out in black and white, of, the 1796 election of Jefferson. They've got a picture here. Jefferson held 4 confidential talks with French consul Joseph Letoum in the spring of 1797, where he attacked Adams, predicting his rival would serve only 1 term. He also encouraged France to invade England, go for it, and advised Letoum to stall any American envoys sent to Paris by instructing them to listen to them and then drag out the negotiations at length and mollify them with the urbanity of the proceedings. This toughened the tone that the French government adopted towards the Adams administration. Well, there you go. This just... Yeah, gee, I'm just so pissed off with people undermining people. You know, they undermine people in such a way that you never see what's going on. Okay. After Adams' initial peace envoys were rebuffed, Jefferson and his supporters lobbied for the release of papers related to the incident called the XYZ Affair, after letters used to disguise the identity of French officials involved. However, the tactic backfired when it was revealed that the French officials had demanded bribes, rallying public support against France. The US began an undeclared naval war with France, known as the Quasi-War. So this is... I don't know, you might be patriotic, but this is pragmatist. He sort of thinks the Federalists are such bad people. He's actually... Isn't that not treason? I can't understand it. Getting another country to attack your country for just beyond belief. During the Adams presidency, the Federalists rebuilt the military, levied new taxes, and enacted the Alien and Sedition Acts. Jefferson believed that these laws were intent to suppress Democratic Republicans rather than prosecute enemy allies, and considered them unconstitutional. So really, it was just a really, you know, nice on the surface, and then just pinching and bashing each other at the back. To rally opposition, he and James Madison anonymously wrote the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions declaring that the federal government had no right to exercise powers not specifically delegated to it by the states. The resolutions followed the interposition approach of Madison, in which states may shield their citizens from federal laws that they deem unconstitutional. Jefferson advocated nullification, allowing states to invalidate federal laws altogether. Jefferson warned that unless arrested at the threshold, the Alien Sedition Acts would necessarily drive the states into a revolution and blood. Well, there you go. Historian Ron Chenow claims the theoretical damage of the Kentucky and Virginia Resolution was deep and lasting, and was a recipe for disunion, contributing to the American Civil War as well as later events. Washington was also so appalled by the resolution, he told Patrick Henry that if systematically and perniciously pursued, the resolutions would dissolve the Union and produce coercion. So really, Jefferson started the American Civil War, according to these people. I would tend to agree with it. It's just the idea of the United States is bizarre anyway. You're looking at the United States, and it's just the East Coast. I think it's down to Georgia, up to Maine, getting a bit further in. Jefferson Madison moved to Philadelphia and founded the National Gazette in 1791, along with poet-writer Philip Freneau, in an effort to counter Hamilton's Federalist polities, which Hamilton was promoting through the influential Federalist paper called the Gazette of the United States. This really rings true of our Aussie. The name escapes me. I can see his face, but you know the newspaper makes sense. It's amazing that this occurs so far. The Gazette made peculiar criticism of the policies promoted by Alexander Hamilton, often through anonymous essays signed by a pen named Brutus at Jefferson's urging, which were actually written by Madison. Well, there you go. Murdoch, there you go, Murdoch. You can see my brain going. Jefferson had always admired Washington's leadership skills, but felt the Federalist Party was leading the country in the wrong direction. Jefferson thought it was wise not to attend his funeral in 1799 because the acute differences with Washington while serving as Secretary of State and remained at Monticello. So there, what a bastard. Person dies, I just think they're absolutely just a pack of bastards, the whole lot. Oh, okay, so there's... New York gets 12 electoral votes. I can't tell what's going on. This polls are just pretty amazing. The 1800 presidential election, Jefferson contended once more against the Federalist John Adams. Adams' campaign was weakened by unpopular taxes and vicious Federalists in fighting over the actions of the Quasi War, which Jefferson got them into. What a bastard. Did I read that right? Yeah. So he just poisoned the thing and got them going into war. Republicans pointed to the Alien Sedition Act and accused the Federalists of being secret monotheists, while the Federalists charged that Jefferson was a godless libertine in the thrall of the French. Historian Joyce Appleby said the election was one of the most acrimonious in the annals of American history. Good God. There'd be no slander laws or anything like that. You can... Republicans ultimately won more electoral college votes, but Jefferson and his vice presidential candidate Aaron Burr unexpectedly received an equal total. Due to the tie, the election was decided by the Federalist-dominated House of Representatives. Hamilton lobbied the Federalist representatives on Jefferson's behalf, believing him the lesser of a political evil than Burr. Oh, there you go. Do you want to, on February 17th, 1801, after 36 ballots, the House elected Jefferson president and Burr vice president. The win was marked by Republican celebrations throughout the country. Some of Jefferson's opponents argue that he owed his victory over Adams to the South's inflated numbers of electors due to the counting of slaves as partial population under the Three-Fifths Compromise. Isn't that amazing? You know, how can you actually have... You've inflated your population because you've counted the slaves. But it is interesting that the population... The man, so this is the electoral ballot. If you don't have franchise, it's now interesting that the actual ballot is you don't have universal franchise, but you have representation. So the man now represents, if you've got 60 people there and one man's only able to vote, that man has got 60 votes. It's just sort of, you can sort of see the college votes have a sensibility. It's alleged that Jefferson secured James Ashton Banyard's tie-breaking electoral vote by guaranteeing the retention of various Federalist posts in the government. Jefferson disputed this allegation, and the historical records are inconclusive. Oh, he sounds like a real twat, quite honestly. Okay. Yeah. The transitions proceeded smoothly, making a watershed of American history. As historian Gordon S. Wood writes, it was one of the first popular elections in modern history that resulted in peaceful transfer of power from one party to another. Presidency, 1801 to 1809, so that's 8 years. Jefferson was sworn in by the Chief Justice John Marshall of the new capital in Washington, D.C. on March 4, 1801. In contrast to his predecessors, Jefferson exhibited a dislike for formal etiquette. He arrived alone on horseback without escort, dressed plainly, and, after dismounting, retired his own horse to the nearby stable. His inaugural address stuck a note of reconciliation declaring, "We have been called by different names, brethren, of the same..." Same principle. We are all Republicans, we are all Federalists. Ideologically, Jefferson stressed that equally and exact justice to all men, minority rights, freedom of speech, religion and press. He said that a free and democratic government was the strongest government on earth. He nominated moderate Republicans to his cabinet. James Madison as Secretary of State, and Henry Harbron as Secretary of War, Levy Lincoln, Attorney General, and Robert Smith, the Secretary of the Navy, whatever that means. Upon assuming office, he confronted an $83 million national debt. He began dismantling Hamilton's Federalist fiscal systems with the help from Secretary of Treasury Albert Gallatin. Jefferson's administration eliminated the whiskey excise and other taxes after closing unnecessary offices and cutting useless establishment and expenses. Small government. They attempted to disseminate the National Bank, disassemble the National Bank, and its effect of increasing national debt, but were dissuaded by Gallatin. Jefferson shrank the Navy, deeming it unnecessary in peacetime. Indeed, he incorporated a fleet of inexpensive gunboats used only for defence, with the idea that they would not provoke foreign hostilities. After 2 terms, he had lowered the national debt from $83 million to $57 million. So that's just that's $26 million that he in 2 years with the U.S. government, he managed to reduce the debt, U.S. debt, by $26 million. Is that amazing? Jefferson pardoned several of those imprisoned under the Alien Sedition Acts. Congressional Republicans repealed the Judiciary Act of 1801, which removed nearly all of Adams' midnight judges from office. A subsequent appointment battle led to the Supreme Court landmark decision, Marbury v. Madison, asserting judicial review over the executive branch actions. Jefferson appointed three Supreme Court justices, William Johnson, Henry Bockrist, Livingston, and Thomas Todd. Jefferson strongly felt the need for a national military university producing an officer engineering corps for a national defense based on advancement of science rather than having to rely on foreign sources for top-grade engineers with questionable loyalty, if you will imagine. He signed the Military Peace Establishment Act on March 16, 1802, thus founding the United States Military Academy at West Point. Oh, there you go. That's West Point. The Marines shouting at each other. Okay, the Act documented in 29 sections a new set of laws and limits for the military, so the military law. Jefferson was also hoping to bring reform to the executive branch, replacing Federalists and active opponents throughout the officer corps to promote Republican values. Well, there you go. Sounds a bit weird, doesn't it? Jefferson took great interest in the Library of Congress, which he had established in 1800. He often recommended books to acquire. In 1802, the Act of Congress authorized President Jefferson to name the first Librarian of Congress and gave itself power to establish a library rules and regulations. You must be quiet, but the Library of Congress is pretty amazing. The Act granted the President and Vice President the right to use the library. God. Okay, the First Barbary War. The American merchant ships had been protected from Barbary Coast pirates by the Royal Navy when the states were British colonies. After independence, however, pirates often captured U.S. merchant ships, pillaged cargoes, enslaved, or held the crew members for ransom. Jefferson had opposed paying tribute to the Barbary states since 1785. In March 1786, he and John Adams went to London to negotiate with Tripoli's envoy, Ambassador Sijah Haja Abrahazman or Sijah Harun Abul Rahman Adja. That's the name. In 1801, he authorized the U.S. Navy fleet under Commodore Richard Dale to make a show of force in the Mediterranean. The first American naval squadron to cross the Atlantic. Following the fleet's engagement, he successfully asked Congress for a declaration of war. The subsequent First Barbary War was the first foreign war fought by the U.S. Let's declare war. Gee. Okay, Pasha of Tripoli, Yusuf Kamali, captured the USS Philadelphia. So Jefferson authorized William S., the U.S. Consul Tiras, to lead a force to restore Pasha's older brother to the throne. My God. Oh, they start so early. The American Navy's forced Tunis and Algiers to breaking their alliance with Tripoli. Jefferson ordered five separate naval bombardments of Tripoli. Good on you, Libya. Leading the Pasha to sign a treaty that restored the peace in the Mediterranean. This victory proved only temporary, but according to Woods, many Americans celebrated as a vindication of their policy of spreading free trade around the world and a great victory to liberty over tyranny. So, pretty amazing. I think Reagan bombed Tripoli. They're just amazing. Now this Louisiana Purchase is just shocking. I just can't. Just does my head in. Spain ceded ownership of Louisiana's territories in 1800 to the more predominant France. That's obviously because Napoleon's had installed his brother in Spain. Jefferson was greatly concerned that Napoleon's interests in the vast territory would threaten the security of the continent and the Mississippi River shipping. He wrote that a cession works most secession, seceding, works most sorely on the U.S. It completely reverses all the political relations with the U.S. In 1802, he instructed James Monroe and Robert Livingston to negotiate with Napoleon to the purchase of the New Orleans, the adjacent coastal areas from France. In early 1803, Jefferson offered Napoleon nearly $10 million for 4,000 square miles, 100,000 square kilometers, which really of tropical territory. So 100,000 is, you know, like 300 by 300 kilometers. It's sort of like a, you know, it's a region, but it's not big. It's sort of like the hinterland, it's sort of 150 kilometers either side of Louisiana and 300 kilometers further back, you know, of New Orleans. So not much. Napoleon realized that the French military control was impractically over such a vast, remote territory. He was in dire need of funds for his wars on the home front. He was actually going to invade Britain with balloons, set his troops first aerial landing in Britain, where he'd have balloons, a balloon fleet. So the balloons were incredibly expensive. Okay, so in early April 1803, he unexpectedly made negotiators a counteroffer to sell 2 million square kilometers of French territory for $15 million, doubling the size of the United States. U.S. negotiators, surprised on this unique opportunity, accepted the offer and signed the treaty on April 30th, 1803. Word of the unexpected purchase didn't reach Jefferson until July 3rd. 1803. He unknowingly acquired the most fertile tract of land of its size on earth, making the new country self-sufficient in food and other resources. The sale also significantly curtailed British and French imperial ambitions in North America, removing obstacles to U.S. westward expansion. God. Although most thought that this was an exceptional opportunity, despite Republican reservations about the constitutional authority of the federal government to acquire land, Jefferson initially thought that the constitutional amendment was necessary to purchase and govern the new territory. But he later changed his mind, fearing that this would give cause to oppose the purchase. He therefore urged a speedy debate and ratification on October 1803, the Senate ratified the purchase and the treaty vote 24-7. After the purchase, Jefferson preserved the region's Spanish legal code and instituted a gradual approach to integrating settlers to the American democracy. He believed the period of federal rule would be necessary while Louisiana adjusted to the new nation. Historians have differed with their assessment regarding the constitutional implication of the sale, but they typically hail the Louisiana acquisition as a major accomplishment. Frederick Jackson Turner called the purchase the most formative event of the American history. I would definitely say so. It's interesting that they're under Spanish law. The Lewis-Clark Expedition. Jefferson anticipated further westward settlements due to the Louisiana Purchase and arranged for the exploration and mapping of the uncharted territory. He sought to establish a U.S. claim ahead of competing European interests and to find the rumored Northwest Passage. Jefferson and others, influenced by the exploration accounts of Le Page du Platz in Louisiana of 1763 and Captain James Cook in the Pacific in 1784, and they had persuaded Congress in 1804 to fund an expedition to explore and map the newly acquired territory to the Pacific Ocean. Jefferson appointed Meriwether Lewis and William Clark to be leaders of the Corps of Discovery, 1803 to 1806. In the months leading up to the expedition, Jefferson tutored Lewis in the sciences of mapping, botany, natural history, mineralogy, astronomy, navigation, giving him unlimited access to the materials at his library at Monticello, which included the largest collection of books in the world on the subject of geography and natural history of North American continent, along with an impressive collection of maps. There you go. That is, you know, if I was a Yank, I'd be proud of a president who who was their main tutor. You can go off. By the way, I'll tell you all about astronomy. The exhibition lasted from May 1804 to September 1806, and obtained a wealth of scientific geographic knowledge, including knowledge of many Indian tribes, poor Indians, other exhibitions. In addition, the Corps of Discovery, Jefferson organized three other Western exhibitions, the William Dumnow, the George Hunter expedition to the Ouachita River, 1804 to 1805, Thomas Freeman and Peter Curtis expedition, 1806, on the Red River, and the Zebon Pike expedition, 1806 to 1807, into the Rocky Mountains in the southwest. All three produced valuable information about the American frontiers. Bloody hell. Jefferson's American Indian policies go for it. Jefferson's experience of the American Indians began during his boyhood in Virginia and extended through his political career into his retirement. He refuted the contemporary notion that the Indians were inferior people and maintained that they were equal in body and mind to the European descent. As governor of Virginia during the Revolutionary War, Jefferson remembered moving... Yes, honey?
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.